Hello, Scotty. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Which amazing. Is always
right,
a
it's in the right hole and everything.
Great advantage. Well, that's what I've been told. But yes. Well, I do need to point out, John, that your engineering skills came through immediately when you sent me a message at 16:26 saying, "Can we record at 16:30 my time, which is in 7 minutes time?"
Uh-huh.
Your ability to tell the time is poor.
Well, the reason why is because I'm not in San Francisco. I'm actually in sunny Hoboken, New Jersey. So I have to do advanced math to be able to calculate, because I was about to say, you know, at 8:30 my time or 11:30 my time, and I didn't want to confuse you or myself. So
by advanced math, you mean welcome. Add three.
Exactly. And I had to put my head in the freezer afterwards to help cool it down. So.
Well, that makes sense. That makes sense. So you're on the road again.
I am on the road again. Yes, I'm trying to be, you know, somewhat more than just an approximate father, because the foul child is now starting his second year of school, and I helped him move in, and now we're shaping the situation. But I actually have done some work, so I will have some things to talk about, plus a special bonus, what's the word, complaint.
A special bonus complaint. Oh, wow.
Rant.
I love it. I love it when the complaints come in the form of a special bonus. I think that's always more special. Right, so you've actually done some work this week. Come on, tell us something about it then.
Well, okay, so mostly it's just like you come back, and I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but you go away for some period of time and then things continue to happen in your absence. And then some things that are deferred, where they basically say, you know, well, so-and-so is not here, so we can't, you know, deal with it. So we'll just like wait until they come back. And that was somewhat the case. So, you know, it basically takes a couple of days to, you know, dig yourself out from under all the Slack threads and the mail messages and then figure out kind of what things you can do. And so I did some regression fixes and also just some improvements with RTL layout. So it's nothing earth-shattering. But there was the thing that I actually did want to talk about a little bit is widgets, because I'm kind of back on that a little bit. Widgets and live activities and other kind of platform-specific stuff, because I was asked about it. Because it was the question was like, you know, are there things that we don't take advantage of on Android and iOS that we should be? So I was, you know, asked about that. And I said, well, there are certain things that we've tried in the past, like, for instance, you know, pop-up menus, kind of, you know, shortcuts, things like you know, long tap on the app icon in the springboard, for instance, because we put that in there, used to be able to access the most common things, you know, the most common of which was like continue watching, for example. And then we also had, you know, whatever, popover menus, pop-up menus from, so you long press on an item in the grid in the Lolomo, and you could do things like add it to your list or that kind of stuff. And we did that early on because, you know, kind of as soon as the technology was out there, but we ended up getting rid of it just because nobody knew it was there at the time and it wasn't worth having that barnacle. But now maybe we're reconsidering it a little bit. And then they asked about live activities, and I thought about that a little bit, and it's like, well, we're not exactly, you know, a transport company. We're not trying to tell you that your cab is coming in 2 minutes, but we do time-based playback. So that's kind of, you know, sparked a little bit of imagination. But with widgets, I think I remember telling you that I was all excited when WWDC came about. And I kind of asked them, it's like, oh, great, does this mean we can have a better lock screen control and put custom images in there so that on the lock screen you could scrub and you could have trick play images, the things that kind of show you what the video will look like or did look like? And the answer, unfortunately, was you couldn't do that, so we're still stuck with the basic kind of transport controls. But then I, you know, without unpacking a whole, you know, whole thread, for years and years and years and years, I've worked on various aspects of second screen experiences, things that tell you kind of something sparks your imagination while you're watching a program, like what is that music, who's the actor, where I've seen them before, what's the cultural reference they're making, all that kind of stuff. And so there are tons of services out there. It's been around for a long time. But a fundamental problem you have is that it forces you to divide your attention, because on the one hand, you just want to sit back and watch something on the big screen. On the other hand, something sparks your imagination. You don't want to get rid of it. So, you know, it's a fairly common thing that people will have their phones open and maybe they'll Google something to look up, you know, where did I see that person before? And there's been all sorts of attempts, you know, some better than others, but they all suffer from that basic thing. But something I'm kind of keen to experiment with a little bit is something where you could register your interest. So you could be watching, you say, just bookmark that, you know, mark that time because later I may want to come back to it. And maybe when I'm done watching and maybe you'll surprise me. So, I think that is something that a widget could be bad. Something is just basically a tap surface to register your interest. So we'll see. But that was kind of fun, and it's kind of good as well because, you know, there's a kind of a hack day coming up, a specialized hack day. So we're thinking about things that we can do for our specialized hack day, which has to do with phone and TV working in conjunction. So that was my happiness for the week. How about you, Scott? Eh?
Well, I'm still, as I said last week, exploring the more up-to-date versions of Swift UI and iOS features because not having really worked on the latest editions of iOS, or in some cases not haven't worked so much on iOS at all because I've been doing Mac stuff over the last number of years now. In some of the, although I watch the announcements and whatever else, I'm not necessarily always up to speed on what things do and don't do and whatever. And I have to say, I'm a pretty basic phone user. I don't often use many of these new bits in the the operating system at all. I'm not an advanced user in any way at all. I make the home screen go away and I open an app, and that's normally about it. the thing of it. Just been trying to get on top of this. I'm looking particularly at some of the new things in Swift UI, particularly around iPad, and looking at all the stuff. A lot of changes around, I think it was iOS 16 with the split views and the navigation views and whatever else. Also trying to do a little bit of research around what these days makes a really good iPad app. And I've been quite surprised. I'm interested to know what your thoughts are on this from your work point of view and just a general experience point of view. And I've been quite surprised, really, looking at a whole bunch of iPad apps, how a lot of them work really nicely, or they just work fine, shall we say, between the phone and app, there seem to be very few that have taken it upon themselves to just make the iPad app different and work differently and really embrace the platform it is on. Now, I don't know if that's because people just don't think I have enough iPad users, or it's just extra work and nobody wants to do extra work, or whatever. So, I mean, how does that work for you guys? I mean, is your iPad app got lots of extra stuff in to cope with the iPad, or are you pretty much a same experience across everything is the goal and therefore you don't change too much?
It's somewhat, it's somewhat a kind of same experience, bigger screen. We've gone back and forth for. I mean, the first Netflix app on a mobile device was on the iPad, and it was one of the earlier ones. And Reed Hastings was on, stage when it was launched, and that was all good. And it was basically, great entertainment with a bigger screen, so on and so forth. And at various times, we've experimented and people have kind of advocated for us, let's take full advantage of the platform. And I think it's a little bit tricky. I mean, I think the minimum viable good behavior for an app is that it just doesn't blow up the screen. So, for instance, the behavior of popovers and sheets and stuff like that is different because you don't really, on a phone, most of the interactions are portrait until you rotate to go do playback. And that's specific for the Netflix app. I mean, there's some apps that are just only ever portrait, like Instagram, social media apps, things like that. We're basically portrait all the time except for when playback begins. And so, for instance, we don't support rotation of the grid. Whereas on iPad, we do. So on the one hand, it's kind of the same code base, same things. We just basically kind of do the things answer the question, can this view controller rotate? And it's yes, except for if you're on iPhone, with the exception of being playback, right? And that's worked. And then, our popover system, our sheet system is well evolved to do that. So there's that aspect of it. You know, other things I think about for iPad apps, there's some that are very professional where the iPad is a kind of a specialized work surface, which is trying to replicate, you know, the things that it does with you know, the multitasking, the things to be able to kind of shrink your screen to, let's say, two-thirds of the size so that you can have something side by side and do drag and drops. I mean, I'm thinking about things that are kind of basic office productivity replacements, and that's not us. There's not a whole lot to be done with it, and it's like one of those weird things where Apple proposes that you do those things, and they kind of do it surreptitiously. It's like they say, well, in the here and now, it's going to help you build a better iPad app, but really in the long run, it's kind of what's going to make vision apps possible, where you get all apps kind of able to resize elegantly and whatnot. I think for professional things, you know, I remember years and years, you know, hearing about kind of some of the mission critical custom apps built for studios like Pixar, for example, where they basically people's time are super valuable. You can imagine shoving an iPad in some director's, you know, hand while they're, you know, being transported to their helicopter, and they have 10 minutes to approve an edit or a scene or mark up or do things like that. So I think that's the problem with iPad. It's like, as a consumer device, it's in a weird position. It's like, it's for some cases, like for a kid's thing, you just hand it to them, it's great, it's a big screen, so on and so forth. For other apps, the kind of the numbers never seem to be really there. I don't think, but that's my opinion. Maybe it changes, but I think I get the feeling of the iPad is kind of like stalled a little bit in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, Apple sells shitloads of them, but I guess the point is people use them for things like Netflix and Apple TV, browsing, right, and webmail, and you know, it feels in many ways it doesn't quite have the same app culture that the phone does, although right, I think in many ways as well there are lots of people who don't really install apps on their phone either. They just use whatever right comes with it. Yeah, so, I mean, obviously there's the whole thing about how much work do you put into, with an app like Moneywell, you know, it's a complex UI, it's, you know, designed initially as a Mac app, it suits the bigger screen of the iPad, and therefore designed as a proper iPad app. It seems to make sense for an iPad version, but it is just it is interesting to see how many people just say, take the no, it works, that will do. And I think particularly as Apple have added, I mean, not huge amounts, but since like iOS 16-ish, you know, there's definitely been, you know, on the iPad, you can do this, on the iPad, you can do that. And a lot of the stuff, like the way that split views work automatically on the iPad in landscape mode, or any larger device, I guess it works on the iPhone Maxes as well, to work differently, it is heading that way. This year, the tab bar change that on iPad, it renders differently to what it does on the iPhone. I'm not quite sure if I like that yet, the way it creates just like the sort of pill-shaped buttons at the top, a bit reminiscent of an old an old Mac OS segment control, to be honest. And some of the playing around of that, it doesn't seem to take a lot of care over what it might be putting it in front of and hiding in your UI. it is in beta, I guess, though. It's interesting. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes and what happens, because there is some effort from Apple to make the iPad, and they had, I think, 2 years ago, was it 2022, maybe 2023, there was lots and lots about desktop class applications on the iPad, was the big thing about WWDC, which is interesting. Now, is this, there's, right, it's the old age-old question to which we won't have an answer to. Is this because Apple are really invested in the iPad, or is this because they want to stop investing in the Mac and so want to make the iPad just about good enough that the Mac can go? I guess until they can get Xcode properly onto that, they can't really answer that question. But it's going to be interesting to see if this is a trend that keeps going. To see if when we get the next range of iPads that they're different in any way at all to accommodate some of these UI changes that are being made, and it's looking forward. Or again, is the tab on the iPad floating around and just being buttons because that will make it work better on Vision OS? That could have been the only reason that was put in there, for all we know. And if that's the case, that's sad, because you know, it's you're adopting things for a platform that possibly doesn't have much of a future at the moment.
Well, yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, I can't imagine it being sunsetted in anything less than 10 years. Can you? I don't know. I mean, I guess you could go on and on about this stuff, but I think that there's still, I would have a hard time kind of switching my productivity work over to an iPad. Even with a keyboard, there's just something I just really like about. I really do love my laptop.
I think it depends on what you do. I think for a lot of people, yeah, they could replace their computer with an iPad. However,
that's probably true.
However, yeah, for a lot of people, the iPad is probably 2 to 3 times the price of their computer that they're currently using, because they're probably using a cheap Windows machine or a Chromebook. Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're spending $1,000 on an iPad instead of $300 on a Chromebook or something. So, you know, right, especially when you add the ridiculous price of the keyboards, like, yeah, what's the keyboard, $400 or something? It's like, right, absolute madness. And then an extra gig of RAM is, you know, you have to sell your third child or something.
Which is usually an acceptable bargain.
Yeah, well, actually, I would give them money as well. The iPad, when the iPad came out, it was pretty similar story, really, to the Vision OS stuff. Because it got a bunch of praise for being a great new form factor. It was pretty useless because it was a single processor machine at the time without sort of multi-threading and all the rest of it. People didn't write any apps for it. And it took a long time, say probably over 10 years, for the iPad to establish itself as a product. And again, compared to the phone, it sells nothing, but they do sell a lot of them. And lots of people have iPads now. But again, what are they using them for? Some professionals use them all the time. So it'll be interesting to see if the Vision OS stuff and the whole goggle thing is just in a similar place, that it's just going to take 10 years. But again, it's another, carrying a slightly bigger device in your bag is one thing. Putting stuff on your face is another. I mean, are you really prepared to sit on the train with one of those on your head? Unless you're a certain type of personality,
which there's a frightening number of them in some parts of the world.
Live in a place where everyone's got that type of personality. Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you're unusual if you're probably not wearing one where you live. But I mean, you know, I've not seen one in the wild here in the UK at all. You know, that someone has been sat in a coffee shop or somewhere using one. Not that I go to that many coffee shops, whatever, to be honest. So it's in there. Yes, but anyway, I've been looking at, spent a lot of time this week sort of like trying to work out what an iPad UI should be and what it should look like and what is the, you know, you would say definitely. So I would be really interested to hear from you. If there are people out there who use iPads apps a lot and are really keen on their iPad, I'd love to know what you think about, the bits that make the iPad great and what apps really should support in them and that type of thing, just to help along in a direction, really. It would be quite interesting.
Indeed. Well, Scotty, can I pass to my what was the phrase I used to describe the special bonus rant/complaint?
Oh yeah, it was a special bonus complaint. Yeah, do you want your own segment for this, or is it just going to merge with the rest of it? Okay, let me think of a segment title. Okay, here we go. John's special bonus complaint. There we are. that's all the budget we're paid for on this podcast.
Thank you. Well, I appreciate that you hired top flight musicians to compose this song.
I'm expecting Sam to take that bit and replace it with some sort of cinematic experience for people.
Okay, very good. Which Sam, of course, is going to do a wah, 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 wah. No, you know, I travel a fair amount, and I typically use United Airlines just because it's the only game in town for certain destinations, and it's kind of, once you start using one, just for kind of the value of the points and this, you know, tiny amount of status that makes traveling slightly less awful when you can, you know, get a bulkhead seat or an exit row seat, whatever. So that there, I do that, and so I use the United app, which I I think we may have even mentioned once or twice before that it seems like they actually do integrate with widgets and live activities and stuff, and they do a rather good job of it. You know, an Apple Wallet. I mean, I think for their app itself, it really is a very good citizen on the platform. But there's one thing that just kind of drives me nuts: the fact that if you ever need to kind of change something, like change a reservation, change the seats. Sometimes it just works, but mostly it's just the fact that they kind of punt and put a web view inside that. And, you know, depending on which of their most arcane systems that they have, you know, you can say, hey, I would like to change the reservation. And it's kind of, you can tell that basically every time you send a request, dust flies around some mainframe somewhere and God knows where. You know, in a bunker in Texas. And I guess the whole system is so arcane that depending on which system has to get used and how close you are to the flight actually leaving or something like that, it becomes an impossible thing. And that's where I think they kind of fall on the floor, in that it's a very weird thing where you go, you know, tap to do something and they put a tiny little toast on the bottom of the screen, which never really captures your eye. It says, please wait. And like when you tap, shit's not working. What's going on? It's like, oh, it's thinking and it's having like a 10-second interaction with some old system. And then you go down the path to try and change something until it finally, you know, times out, gives you a cryptic error. And then, so at that point, you have no choice to make a phone call or to go to one of their kind of chat systems. And so I kind of had occasion to use this to have to redo a ticket. And it was a situation where I had no choice but to, you know, I decided I'm not going to wait on the phone and spend half an hour on permahold at the first 10 minutes of which them telling you is like, did you know you can go to the United website and make your change? It's like, no, that failure is what sent me here. And so I said, oh, okay, maybe I'll just try the automated message system, because that is something I've been interested in. Apple, you know, has, you know, a system for basically making it possible to have kind of rich chat experiences, you know, which I think is pretty good. Like, you know, imagine if you interact with a computer and it's sending you, you know, it could send you stickers, attachments, all that kind of stuff. So I thought, oh, that should work out well. And it kind of did and it didn't, but it was a kind of a comic experience where I managed to basically explain what I needed to do. And at that point, it was clear that my messages were appearing on a screen in a call center somewhere in India, I'm going to guess. And eventually I kind of got the thing done. But then it came time to like, well, the fare difference is going to be, you know, 80 cents. So, and they sent me this form, you know, that you had to fill out, which was a terrible experience because it didn't, you know, do anything like typical forms that exist on a phone. If it's a UI text field, for example, automatically you get the things like, hey, I remember what your password is, or like your credit card number, expiration date, that kind of stuff. This didn't work. It was like basically it was a front end to a PDF with this idea of being a security, and then it would get sent over all this rigmarole just to be able to charge 80 cents to a credit card. And the processing fee for that is probably more than 80 cents. So that was great. And the reason I went into this whole thing is not about particular aspects of the app design. It's just basically the fact that they have this weird, you know, system that's just pathological, and they make customers pay the price. So in the end, they have this thing saying, it's like, oh, would you like to give your feedback? And I, for better or worse, I said, okay, I'm bored. And so for the next 5 minutes, I made screenshots and essentially told that tale and sent it back to them. And I'm not expecting a phone call from the CEO today, but probably by Friday. And if that happens, I will certainly report back. But it is indicative of, I feel for the developers that work on the app, because there are certain things under their control with data services that are kind of up to date, and the interaction on that's happening on the platform. It's just that weird thing where they have to go back to the most legacy of legacy systems. They just it falls apart. It makes then the whole experience kind of souring. Anyway, that's my long rant. Do you have precisely zero sympathy?
Yeah, really.
And interest?
None at all. Yeah, just zero interest that you had to you know, wait on the phone for a little while to speak to someone for 80 cents, because that's just called life, really. Isn't that just the modern equivalent of, I know, something that people had to do in the past that we now look back on and think was mundane, boring, and how could you even do it? That people in 10 years' time, 20 years' time, are going to look back and say, how could these absolute Neanderthals even think about using a telephone to organize a flight and change things?
Well, that's true, Scotty. There's no reason to have any sympathy. It's just it is that weird thing where you can have, you know, people's expectations of delight and free flow. I mean, because it, like back in New York, the fact that I can, you know, it used to be you had to find tokens, and then that stopped happening, and then you had metro cards, which were a step up, but still they're a pain in the ass. And if you don't have money on your card, you basically have to go wait in line with every other poor schlub and go through this terrible touch experience to fill up the card. It absolutely sucks. Contrast that with kind of modern, you know, transport systems where you just double tap on your phone, tap the thing to it, and you just go through. In fact, I remember at NS conference some years ago, and I'm spacing on the guy's name, something with an A, not Arik, but, you know, a Turkish guy, talked a lot about user experience, and he had a slide basically saying what the experience of is getting off of a plane. I think it was in like Copenhagen, and with your carry-on, you just pass through these gates just by tapping something on your phone. It just makes you feel like a superhero. And that's what the best modern, you know, phone apps can do. It's just that when you kind of some aspect of your traversal through life as a superhero runs into something, then it does feel like somebody's shoved kryptonite in your face and you're reminded that life is not always so magic, even though it is.
True.
Anyway.
True.
That's probably enough. Yeah.
Yeah. It's, I think, you know, this whole thing about it's we delight our users, I think it's just marketing crap, basically, because very few people...
Oh, Scotty, that's so cynical.
Very few people are delighted by their devices. Let's take a normal user. You don't sit somewhere there going, you know, occasionally you hear someone say, oh, this is wonderful, this is lovely, this is fantastic, and telling their friends, and, you know, that's great when that happens. Most of the time, people just expect it to work and then just get pissed off when it doesn't. There's no delight. There's normal and pissed off.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. You're...
I'm being a bit cynical today. Yeah. So the slogan shouldn't be to delight our users. The slogan should be to not piss them off too much.
Okay. Since 1873, avoiding pissing off our customers.
Yeah.
That can be for this.
That should be actually the latest Moneywell slogan, should it? Moneywell. It won't piss you off too much.
Yes, I like bad,
it.
Actually.
I like it. I'll see if I can sell it to the team.
Well, I think there we now have this episode's title and a good stopping point, because, I mean, so let me say this, Scotty, if people want to find you on and tell you to be less cynical and more joyful and more delightful, where and how might they do that?
If people want to waste their time with those types of statements, they perfectly can on Mastodon, where I am, MacDagnet at mastodon.social. But I really would like to hear from iPad users about what makes a good iPad app. That would be very, very interesting to me. And John, if people
That would delight you.
It would delight me, but it wouldn't be an app, would it? Whereas John, if people want to tell you to just like get over yourself that, you know, the telephone is still a thing and sometimes you have to use it, where should they do that?
Well, they should use their internet-connected mobile devices and dial 1-800-DROP-DEAD. Now, you can find me on Mastodon, where I'm Djembe. That's D-J-E-M-B-E, like the West African drum, Djembe at mastodon.social. Or you can find me on Threads, where I'm John Fox.
Well, John, enjoy the rest of your traveling. Hopefully you will get some more work done this week and have something to talk about. You'll find a complaint to make for next week, of which none of us will care. And
no.
And beyond that, we'll see how it goes. But it's been nice to speak to you again. Enjoy your don't forget your time difference. Add 3, -3, whichever way you're going. And for those who've listened this week, we can only apologize once again. But thanks for listening, and until next time.
You take care to not become cynical like Scotty.
Too late. Thank you.